I mean, I don't know. I'm not counting. So, I mean, the president. So, anyway.
Okay.
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 So, doesn't look like it. Okay. All right. So, with this bill here.
Yes.
Why are you against the bill?
Why am I what?
Why are you against the bill?
Why am I against it?
Yeah. Well, not the amendment, because we support the amendment, right? Why are you against the bill?
Well, the biggest thing is about how we deal with federal law enforcement. And let me look specifically where it is. Yeah, because it nullifies any law allowing for the confiscation of firearms from law-abiding citizens, even if it's the federal doing that. It is, the bill provides that any federal law enforcement official that attempts to enforce any law on this list of the bill is guilty of a Class A misdemeanor. So they're basically saying a law enforcement official is going to be guilty of a Class A misdemeanor even if they think they're enforcing federal law. I think it gets into a real dangerous area, Senator. And it doesn't, I guess I would be very willing to stand up to the federal government for the things that we think are important as Missourians, but I don't think having that provision in there really makes our state safer and makes our right to bear arms stronger. It just simply doesn't. So
that's
really, I think it's a piece of paper that doesn't even mean that much, except when it has to go to court and we waste our time on that, or we find, you know, a federal law enforcement official just trying to do his best to protect us and gets in trouble with the state of Missouri.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You know? I totally agree. I think that it's a bad piece of legislation, and it's a piece of legislation that, if passed, this state would be a laughingstock throughout the country.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't think that this bill would do anything. And maybe they don't care.
Right.
Maybe they don't care. They don't want to reduce gun violence. Maybe because it's not happening in their communities, they don't care about gun violence in urban corridors. Maybe they just, I mean, because back in the days you had the Klans, they used to kill black folks, and now I guess they feel like, look, they can kill themselves. Who cares? And so we don't want to regulate guns. So.
I think you said earlier, you know, this does nothing to reduce gun violence in our state, and you're right. It's not designed for that at all. It's not a consideration at all in this bill, or even a consideration of this body, unfortunately. So, you know, when it comes to something that would be a gun bill, your immediate thought, my immediate thought, would be great. Let's come up with some ideas that, you know, doesn't violate someone's Second Amendment, but also gives prosecutors and law enforcement a way to put more bad guys in jail. And that's not even a consideration of this bill whatsoever. It is all set up to say that the federal government can't do certain things and that somehow the state of Missouri is going to enforce that.
Yeah,
so that's a problem, I think.
I truly believe that that is a problem with this particular piece of legislation. And that's why, you know, I don't think that we should allow for this legislation to move, because it's not helping solve the real problem. And again, that is the problem with gun homicides throughout, not just the city of St. Louis or Kansas City, but throughout the state of Missouri. You know, you have a serious drug problem with meth.
Right.
And meth is a serious problem. And a lot of those individuals, we will see at some point, commit crimes to get a fix, to get their meth fix. We will see those individuals committing crimes with guns.
Right.
And I think that if we don't put a handle on it now and figure out how we can, as a collective body, try to reduce homicides in the state of Missouri, then we're not doing our due diligence. as elected officials. So,
well, you know, the problems are complicated, Senator, and it takes a lot of hard work. And I think maybe a unique point of view is that I don't think some of these the idea of more restrictions on guns, I don't think is necessarily the way to stop gun violence, but also having it to where we aren't going to enforce federal laws doesn't make sense either. I think it was my first year or second year in the House, we passed a concealed carry law. And I overrode Governor Holden's veto on that. I thought it was okay to do a concealed carry. Mm-hmm. But at the time, what we heard was, if we had concealed carry, oh my goodness, we're going to have so much more crime in the state. That's what the opponents said. The proponents of concealed carry said, oh, we're going to get rid of crime altogether if we have concealed carry.
Do you know the murder rate in the state of Missouri?
Right. Well,
not in the city of St. Louis.
But in truth, what has happened is that law-abiding people went through their conceal and carry class, and now more law-abiding people are able to carry their gun and conceal it, and they were following the law anyway. You know, it's sometimes silly to go after people who are already following the law, but we seem to just not have that focus.
You know, the United States of America, we have more guns in the United States than any other country in the world. Did you know that?
Yes.
You know, my question to you is this here. The military weapons, because in North St. Louis, where I'm from, you have young 16 and 17-year-old kids with military weapons like AK-47s and Uzis.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, where are they getting those guns from? I mean, how could a 16-year-old kid impoverished, how is it that he can get his hands on a military weapon
That's
like an AK-47?
It's mind-boggling. I don't know where a young person would get something like that.
That's a military weapon, right?
Right. Well, I don't know weapons that well. I don't know, but it's certainly a
Uzi. You know what an Uzi is.
It's certainly something
that...
young
kids in the hood, I mean, they have Uzis. Mm-hmm. They have AK-47s. The law enforcement officers are afraid to stop those kids because they're dealing with just 9mm Glocks or 45s. They are afraid of those young men who's on the street corners selling dope with AK-47s. How are they getting AK-47s in North St. Louis?
Well, I don't know, but I can tell you this. We're not following any type of gun regulation law. You know, they're either stealing them or they're buying them illegal.
Where are they stealing AK-47s from? I mean, where are they stealing AK-47s
I don't know.
And Uzis?
I don't know.
You know what? Those type of weapons need to be banned. I mean, imagine.
Well, Senator,
imagine.
That's what
going
is
into the body of a young man or a woman. Imagine an AK-47 and the bullets that comes out of an AK-47 going into the body of an innocent teenager. Well, I mean, it rips their body
terrible.
Up.
But I would say
the question that I have is, how are these kids getting AK-47s?
I don't know.
And Uzis.
I don't know, Senator.
And Glock 10s.
I don't know. But I don't think, you know, saying they're banned, they're already banned for them to have them in the first place. So
is it like, do they go to the gun? Can they pick them up from the gun shows? I mean, where are they getting those guns from?
I don't know. They're doing it illegally for sure. And, you know, the point of it was why I supported conceal and carry. I still do. Is because law-abiding people who are up front would go and be able to conceal their weapon because they follow the rules. Similarly, Senator, your amendment on this bill that law-abiding people would go tell the police department that their gun was stolen so that a criminal doesn't use it. I mean, I think what you had is a common sense thing. And what here's the funny thing that I also thought about is that the reconsideration is to show that members of this body are pro Second Amendment. And it's not my job to defend the majority, but I can go around the room to these senators and say, of course they've had a career where they've defended the Second Amendment. You know? They don't have anyone to, they don't have to explain to anyone. They've had a career of it. They've done it. They've lived it. You know, say the senator from Lewis isn't a pro-gun guy because he votes on one amendment. That's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, and it's really, again, it's appalling to me how easy,
right?
How easily individuals will bust under pressure.
Right.
Okay.
The
senators that supported this amendment literally bust under pressure. Now I know pressure can bust a water pipe, but wow, I didn't know up until today what it can do to someone's head.
Okay. Well, we know that the senator from Buchanan has this motion. We know that he is pro Second Amendment. He's served in the House and the Senate and has always done it that way. Whether he reconsiders this or not, he has a record of where he's been.
And that interest group
should know that.
The senator from Franklin, right?
Oh, the senator from Franklin is beyond.
He said, look, my street cred speaks for itself.
That's right. And I would say other senators in this body have the same way. Whether they voted for this amendment, they should stick with it. If there's changes to be made in the House, they should go with that, as opposed to try to reconsider.
I absolutely agree. And I just think it's really unfortunate that we're here right at this point.
It is.
And I do believe that this is only the beginning, that we need to gear up and we need to get prepared. Next time I'm going to have on some tennis shoes. I mean, some different type of shoes, you know, not these shoes here, but I think I'm doing pretty good with these shoes.
Senator, I want to let you know that I got two new pairs of shoes on Saturday. You don't know if you know where Rockports are? They're dress shoes that are comfortable like athletic shoes. So I'm wearing them now, Senator.
Yeah.
I'm going to be ready for the rest of the session with two new shoes.
Yeah, you got to gear it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to gear up.
So
how do you like being in the Senate? I mean, what is it like for you being here in the Senate as a freshman with 7 more years to go, hopefully?
Yeah, hopefully. I'm enjoying the Senate. You know, it is interesting moving from the House to the Senate. Like the senator from the 10th doesn't have that burden like you and I had. We almost have to forget a bunch of stuff and then come here and learn it all over again. And with that said, you know, there's just so many points of where you can really add your voice. You could be a greater, stronger voice for the voiceless here in the Senate. You know, and I think that's really important. You know, the Senate is what I like to call the final accountability of state government. Because the free and fair discussion will ever be found in the firmest friend of truth. And we get to speak as long as we want, and we get to discuss things. And we have this unique system where we sit next to our colleagues, not by party, but just by seniority. And so this is where things that don't make sense should have a lot of trouble, you know, because this is where all the discussion is made. And that's why I like being in the Senate. Now, the House is so regimented. I don't know if you've ever had any issue with your minority leader when you're in the House at all.
No, actually, I had a great relationship with the Republican party.
No, I'm talking about your own party.
Oh, yeah, you kicked me off budget, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about Leader Tallboy. But the point is, here in the Senate, we get to have this type of discussion and make our point. And I'm sure there's members of the Senate would like for this discussion to be over, but the Senate is where we make our point. That's what we're trying to do right now, is make a point that this isn't a good motion to reconsider. I was planning on standing up, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is nothing that I plan on doing. I just think that, you know, we should not be here. We should not be here having a conversation to reconsider. when there were many other options on the table. It's totally disrespectful to me as a senator to just reconsider my amendment. Out of all of the amendments that was offered, basically we're saying that 72 hours guns should be reported. And we have a problem with a very practical piece of a very practical amendment like reporting guns. It's I really don't know what to say about that.
It's very frustrating. And no progress on the fact that if you change from shall to may.
Well, you know, shall to may. I mean, let's just face it. I mean, what do we, how would that help? I guess, you know, they can do that already. They may do it already. I mean, they can just report it or not report it already. So how would that help? Changing it from may to shall is just a thought that I gave earlier to the senator from Franklin, but I don't think that this is going to really do anything other than what we're already able to do now. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm still baffled, as I mentioned before. I'm just baffled that we first deal with this bill, and now we're going through this very rare reconsideration for something that just last week every single person. Well, I guess not every single person. I know the senator from Phelps said he was against it, but most people supported it. And you know, the legislative process is long, Senator, and the fact that there's something in the Senate that some people don't like, well, there's always the House. There's always another way to go about it. And I understand that reconsideration isn't within our rules, and we're able to do that. It just seems like a rare type thing just to get rid of one amendment based on a fear that one special interest group would not be happy with it.
When was the last time we reconsidered a bill in the Senate? Do you recall?
I don't remember. I don't know if we did one last year or not.
Did we do? Maybe Don can look that up and see.
Yeah, he knows.
When was the last time?
Everything. Well, you know, I just think about, and maybe you can call it a daydream, Senator, that if the parties were different in this chamber, how it would be handled if, let's say, our friends in the labor movement would come to our leader and say, you need to reconsider, I think the answer would be, well, no, we've already gone down that path. And we'll certainly have an opportunity to change some of these unintended consequences in the House, but we've already gone down that. This is the Senate, and we've done that, and we're not going to reconsider things simply because of outside pressure. That, to me, is the way we probably should be handling this as well. But then again, Senator, I really do think that this bill is... I think we disagree. I think you think it's a little more destructive than I think it is. I just think that when it comes down to it, the provision that says that any law enforcement official that attempts to enforce any law is guilty of a Class A misdemeanor, I just think that's going to be thrown out, and it's just...
will be thrown out?
To me, it just seems like a pure conflict between state and federal. And maybe it won't be thrown out, but it's going to be a problem and very difficult for the Attorney General to try to support.
So, but, you know, my question is this here, and I'm just curious to know, you know, how much money will we have to spend trying to defend it?
I just don't know.
And court, that's the question.
Lots?
I mean, we should have a fiscal note on things like that. You know, if it was to be challenged in court, how much money would we have to spend trying to protect.
If I could, I'd ask Don. He knows all that stuff. But
is it over? You think
he knows
it's over?
Everything.
You think it's over $1,000?
Oh, I would think so. I would think the court proceedings would be, quite expensive. Well, you know, even if it's a dollar, Senator, it's too much, right?
Yeah, I'm just curious to know how much money would we have to spend trying to protect this legislation if it was challenged.
I don't know the answer, but I can tell you this, I think the Attorney General has more important things to do than try to defend legislation that's not only poorly written, but unnecessary to protect a Second Amendment right that we already have.
And, you know, I think that what's really appalling to me, though, is this here. We all colleagues. And before they even thought about this reconsideration, I think that there should have been a level of discussion about what it was they were looking to consider.
Uh-huh.
No one came up to me and said, oh, Senator, you know what, we're looking to reconsider this, so, you know, let's figure out how we can work this thing out, or let's figure out, let's see. But, you know, just to come out of nowhere and say, oh, we're going to go ahead and file this motion to reconsider without having any conversation or dialogue whatsoever, it's very, very disrespectful. And again, I didn't know that that's how it worked in the Senate up until today.
Yeah,
when
I'm
I saw
surprised.
What happened.
I'm surprised.
So do you think that, again, because we can only talk about the amendment so much, okay?
Right.
But at the end of the day, do you believe that the amendment will cause any harm to people right to bear arms?
Oh, I don't, really don't. I really don't think so at all.
You don't think so?
You know, in fact, you know, especially listen to the senator from Franklin last week. The objection to your amendment was an objection to a similar idea, but it was a lot stronger than your amendment. I think you even specifically wrote it the way to put it on the bill.
Hey,
am I right?
Yeah, but you know what? The bill actually stated 24 hours.
Okay.
And, yeah. You know, and I said, okay, how about 72 hours where we take away
right.
The penalties and allow for the local municipalities to file their own ordinances so that they can figure out if they want to make it a misdemeanor
right.
Or something of that magnitude. But
yeah, I think 72 is a lot more reasonable than 24, Senator. I think that was the right thing to do because that's three full days, right? Is that right? Yeah. As opposed to rushing around the 24 hours. And we know, you've talked to law enforcement folks that like this idea, that they report when a gun is stolen. Is that correct?
Yeah, I truly believe that that is correct.
Yeah.
But again, at the end of the day, I don't believe that my amendment will do anything to hurt the Second Amendment.
No, I don't
rights
think so
either. Of people that, you know, care so deeply about the Second Amendment.
And as I mentioned before, I think it's just another tool in the law enforcement's toolbox that they can know. I mean, if they start tracking that guns are being stolen in one certain neighborhood, that's probably a good thing for them to know. I also don't think it is the end-all solution to crime in our cities. But, you know, again, if we have to continue to come up with these ideas and try to make progress, otherwise we're just going to keep having the same results we've had now.
You know what? I am getting all kind of notes from everybody, right? You need to find a way out. You need to figure out how you're going to, you know, find a way out. This is not what this is about. It's not about me finding a way out. You need to find a way out, and who cares about finding a way out?
Well, what's your way out,
I mean,
Senator?
This is not about me trying to find a way out, okay? That's not what this is about. This is about me standing up for what I think is right. And if I decide to sit down 5 hours from now, 10 hours from now, 3 hours from now, I believe that at the end of the day, my constituents truly know, understand that they have someone that's going to stand up and speak truth to power and talk about the wrong that's occurring here, that has occurred here and this body. So I'm not looking for a way out. That ain't what I'm looking for. I don't have to have a way out. So we're going to continue to have this conversation, okay? So, Senator, when I talk to my colleagues, we talk about the bill, and we talk about how unconstitutional this particular piece of legislation is. But what we didn't talk about was what we're going to do about it. How are we going to fight this bill back? And again, I don't know if my colleagues, meaning on the minority side, think this is something that we should be willing to down the sword on. Do you think that this is a bill that we should be willing to down the sword?
Well, what do you mean by that, Senator? What do you mean by down the sword?
Meaning that, you know, we go and we talk about the issues of importance until we can't talk about the issues of importance anymore.
Well, here's the thing, Senator. I just think there's so many different issues. There's so many important issues. There's different levels of passion about different issues by different senators. And as far as standing up until the middle of May and speaking, I don't have that much passion against this bill for that. I do respect if you do, which is why when you asked Inquirer me a little over an hour ago, I said sure, because I do think it's important that every senator has their say. I just think that at some point we have to fight the good fight and know when we, you know, the numbers aren't.
You don't think this is a fight? You don't think you should be fighting this fight, huh?
No, I do. I do. I think so. It's just a matter of how you
What do you think we should be? I mean, what's that one battle that you willing to go all the way out on?
You know, I don't know what that is, Senator.
What's your passion?
And I'm not trying to be not answering your question. You know, I did an amendment last week. We've already talked about it that I think would be really good for our state to expand Medicaid. I didn't think there was any point to speak a long time on it because I wasn't going to change people's minds. But I thought it was important to bring up the issue and keep pushing it. Too many times we think that one legislative session or one legislative day is the end of things, and they really aren't. So you have to just keep plugging away, and maybe these good ideas can finally get done. So I'm not really answering your question of you know, what it means to me to die on the sword, but there's a lot of bad bills, Senator, and you know, I think it would make sense if the senator from Franklin would agree to your shall in May. I think it makes sense if he asked for the Senate to go at ease and talk to you personally. That may help a little bit, but that would be your call.
I think we've turned this Senate into the House. I mean, you asked for unanimous consent to begin to continue to dialogue and communicate about an issue that we don't agree on, and then a senator gets up and speak against it. It reminds me of being in the House.
Well, now who asked
I felt like the minority in the House when that happened.
Did you ask for unanimous consent to do that?
Yeah, because I mean, what I heard was that they want to weigh you out or something out of some crazy stuff. I don't know.
Are any of those notes that you're getting give you any guidance at all?
Say that again?
Are any of those notes that you're receiving give you any guidance?
What type of guidance do I need other than the fact that this is a horrible bill?
So you're getting the notes that this bill's horrible?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Senator. I would like to inquire the senator from the second. Mr. President. Like to inquire the senator from the
Senator from the second is not in the building, Senator.
Okay, the senator from the second is not in the building. How about the senator from Franklin and see what we're going to do with this amendment? I'd like to inquire
Sergeant,
the senator.
I do not see him in the chamber. Sergeant-at-Arms, would you please retrieve the senator from Franklin? Senator from Franklin, do you yield to the senator from the 5th for an inquiry? Hold on.
I do.
Proceed. He does proceed.
Senator.
Senator.
What are you upstairs listening?
I was listening intently.
And
I was listening more to you than the senator from the 11th. But
what about the NRA? Have you spoken with the NRA yet? Have you guys made up?
No.
Called you yet?
No.
You're dancing you're dancing to their tune right now, and
I'm dancing to their tune. I must not be a very good dancer.
You following blindly.
I think not.
Tell me this here. So, this amendment. Did you talk to any of your colleagues to see if this amendment will be suitable for that horrible piece of legislation that you sponsored?
I've gotten a little feedback, and it hasn't been great.
Not even vague? We were back to the basics.
Yeah.
With May. I mean, we May takes us right back to where we were before I even offered the amendment, right? And they're not even willing to do that.
I think one of the things that I've just heard is there might be some, and the person that was whispering in my ear was just being the messenger boy. He wasn't the message. He was just the messenger boy.
I ain't never seen so many notes in my life. Go ahead.
Evidently, I think there might be some confusion about the 72-hour portion, where it says a person may report such theft within 72 hours, because then the concern is what happens after 72 hours. Can they still report it if it's after 72 hours? But I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You know, I'm hearing that this is the first time in a long time that a bill was reconsidered on perfection. So this is a very serious piece of legislation here, huh?
Well, it's almost as historic as you and I trying to work together.
Wow. So are you going to be willing to support this amendment? Would you be willing to support this amendment that I have here to move it from may into shall?
Well, I think we probably need to change a little bit more of that, because do you see what was brought to my attention just now, which once I read it again, it does make at least some sense, is it says a person may report such theft within 72 hours. So it creates a little bit of confusion about what happens after 72 hours.
You say, okay, repeat that, because I was reading a note here. I'm sorry.
Okay, so right now, I think what your amendment would, the one that you're considering, what your amendment would say is a person may report such a theft within 72 hours. So I think that 72 hours at the end of the sentence has caused some confusion, because the question is, what happens after 72 hours?
Okay. So do you don't have a problem with the requirements requiring individuals to report, right? You don't have.
Well, you're asking me to speak in favor of the amendment, which goes beyond our deal. Our deal was that I would not speak.
Well, you reneged on the deal already, so you may as well continue to renege.
Nope. That's not true, Senator. That's not true at all.
Yes, you did. I mean, Senator, all we have in this body is our word.
Yep, absolutely.
And you gave me your word, and we had a press conference.
Yeah, but what did I give you my word to do?
And now you...
What did
you,
I give you, you my you, word you, to do?
Basically, you... Now what you're saying is that you're not going to be able to support it now. Because
what
you
did
told
I give you my word
you
to
gave
do?
Me your word that you would support it.
No, I gave you my word that I would not speak against it, and that I would not do anything to keep it from passing. And I have absolutely kept that word to the letter.
You know what?
I mean, and I've even gotten extra credit, like I should get an A++ because not only have I kept my word, but
I would never do another press conference with you again.
I've also gotten into a big hullabaloo with the NRA.
That would be the last press conference I do with you because, you know, that was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, for you to come out and we came out as if we were united on this issue and that, you know, there was nothing wrong with the amendment.
Senator,
too bad,
have you watched the press conference?
Too bad to the extent where
you
can live with it.
Have you watched the press conference? Because if you watch the press conference, you'll see that I made it very clear that I was not speaking in support of the amendment, that I was speaking about the confusion that the NRA was creating about the amendment. Our agreement was and is that I would not speak against the amendment and that I would not try to keep it from getting on the bill. I have followed that deal.
You know, that's very deceptive. Senator, that's very deceptive, okay? Matter of fact, I'm done talking to you because you're not being honest. You're almost like the NRA now.
Nope, that's okay? Not true.
You're not being honest, so...
Not true.
I'm done talking to you, Senator, because you're not being honest, and... It's really unfortunate. Mr. President.
Senator from the 5th.
I would like to inquire the Senator from the 4th, please.
Senator from the 4th does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant Arms, please find the Senator from the 4th. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator from the 4th has arrived. Senator, would you accept an inquiry from the Senator from the 5th? He does. Proceed.
Good evening, Senator. How are you?
I'm good, Senator. I'm good. How are you?
I like that new haircut.
Why, thank you. I got them all cut.
Sharp, right?
Thank you.
I like the look. So tell me this here before I go on into this amendment and this horrible piece of legislation. The criminal code.
Criminal code. 1,100 pages, yeah.
1,100 pages.
Something like that.
Is this the first bill that you ever had the opportunity to read? I mean, have you read this? How many senators are going to read this?
I have not read the
bill. I wonder how many of us are going to read 1,100 pages here.
The senator from the 10th and the senator
So we may be just voting on anything because, I mean, I want to know how many senators are committed to reading 1,100 pages. And then having to go through all of the repeal sections to see exactly what those sections will do. I mean, are we really up to this challenge?
That's quite a challenge. We're not going to finish that. If we decide to read that, we're not going to do the whole thing this session.
So we probably should. I mean, we should have had this bill. Hopefully we're not going to vote on this week.
We're going to vote.
I don't know how many of us are going to go through 1,100. How many? What? 1,000?
1,100.
How many of us going to take time and go through 1,100 pages and cross-reference the numbers that's being repealed to see exactly what's happening with this piece of legislation?
And to complicate it, there's a companion bill in the House. So we're going to have to compare them to see who's the same and who's not.
How long would it take for someone to read 1,100 pages? Do you know? I used to own a bookstore. And
that's right. You did own a bookstore, didn't you?
Yeah, I owned a bookstore for 11 years, or a decade. The first African-American female bookstore in the city of St. Louis.
How do you know that?
I owned and operated the bookstore. And really, that's where I started my activism. We had the bill that came up. It was a conceal and carry. And Jett Banks, you know, Jett Banks was opposed to the conceal and carry. And so we would all gather at my bookstore. It would be myself, Jett Banks, Senator Bass, Charles Quincy Troup, you know, Sharon Tyus, Alderwoman Tyus, Irene J. Smith. And we would get together and we would, you know, circle the table. You know, we had this nice oak table in the middle. And we would basically figure out how we was going to kill the conceal and carry in the city of St. Louis. And, I mean, you know, that was one of former Senator Jett Banks' biggest issue as a senator, you know, making sure that that bill didn't pass. But here we are today, and we have conceal and carry. But we used to sit around the bookstore, and we would have book readings because we have book clubs. Yeah. And I'm telling you, it would take us like a 400 pages, it would take us like 2 to 3 days to read that book.
To read the book
and come back and discuss the book. Now, you're talking 1,100.
How many books in your bookstore do you think were 1,100 pages?
I've never seen anything like this. I mean, and then the bad part about it is we're going to be voting on it. And many of us probably won't start reading it until after we pass it off perfection.
And the hero probably dies in the middle of the thing. So
you say what? And look at all of these different sections we are repealing. It's a lot of different sections there. So we are repealing so many different sections. I don't know how many sections are we looking to repeal. It's a lot of sections, too.
Why don't you take your pen out and put brackets around the whole conceal and carry section, and then we'll vote on that. What do you think of that?
Yeah. We can surely make that a reality. And then you have, well, even after you read the bill, it's not that bad because you don't have every single page that's new. That's a new section. You have some things that's being bracketed out. But for the most part, yeah, you probably can get through this because it's on the back and the front, and it's not that much. But I think, but anyway, our senator, the amendment. Let's talk about my amendment.
72 hours.
What do you think about reporting guns stolen 72 hours once you realize that it was stolen? What do you think? What do you think about that?
Well, you don't need to pass a law for me to do it. I had a couple stolen, and I reported them the same day.
You reported the same day?
Yep. Came home from work, and my house had been burglarized, and I reported them within an hour.
You know, I spoke with Chief Dotson about the reporting, and he thought that, you know, he said, hey, I think that's good. You know, we can report stolen guns, and we actually know how many guns are out there on the street, then we can really have a glimpse into what some of the outcomes may be as a result of those guns being stolen. Because
well, sure.
9 times out of 10, you know, I guarantee you if an individual steals a gun, they're going to do something with that gun.
I would agree.
And we can basically get a glimpse of what's to come. And that way they can heighten up security in different neighborhoods because we know where the high crime is and the community. If we know how many guns are out there that's stolen, then, you know, 9 times more likely, you know, we can step up patrol in those areas or whatnot. The guy that I was talking about earlier, That was your district.
Yeah.
You know, the little guy that was shot to death walking to the store. Because you make up North St. Louis. How much of North St. Louis do you have now?
I go all the way up to Riverview and 270, and I basically follow King's Highway up.
So you're right in the hood.
Oh, yeah. I got the wealthiest people and the poorest people. Yep.
And you know that. What are some of the things that we can do in our communities to reduce crime? What are some of the things that you think? Because if this is not the answer, I'm looking for the answer, and I really want to know the answer because I truly believe at the end of the day, we should be trying to figure out ways to reduce crime in high poverty areas.
I couldn't agree more.
What are some of the things that you think we should be focusing in on here in the Senate to reduce crime in the city of St. Louis?
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you. In both of our districts, in some of those high crime areas where we have all the adolescents with one and two guns and shooting each other for tennis shoes or drug deals or whatever.
That's
tell
what
me
doing.
I'm wrong, but they didn't pay for those guns. Or if they did pay for them, They paid someone else for them. You know, I would say that's probably where most of the stolen guns end up, in those high crime areas. But, you know, you got to crack down on it. You know, we are, in my opinion, we're way too lax with our gun laws in the state of Missouri. But
you think we are too lax with gun laws in the state of Missouri?
We got 3 million guns or some obnoxious number. What are we doing?
And you know what? You know what's really a concern to me is this here. A lot of the outstate legislators, they don't really understand what's happening in the inner city and why we are so adamantly opposed to any type of gun movement. Because they don't see each and every day what's happening in the community. They don't see what we see. You know, you have mothers. You know, mothers, you know, they have to go identify their child's body. And these are children, like teenagers, 14, 15, 16 years old, that are being shot in the head each and every day.
You and I've got
mothers—they have to go in there and they have to identify their child's body. That's not what Nieves doesn't see. That they don't—he doesn't hear about Senator. Sorry, Senator from Franklin. He doesn't have to, hear about those horror stories. But we do. You know, we have to listen to those stories and we have to comfort the mothers and the grandmothers of those children are. Are dying each and every day to gun violence. We have to be the ones that go out and help them with burial costs because they cannot afford to bury their child because they didn't have insurance, because they were living below the poverty level. We have to deal with all of those issues. And so, again, we can empathize.
Yeah, I mean,
and the fact that they can only sympathize with what's happening each and every day in the inner cities, it's something.
I mean, I get emails. People, you know, the gun violence is so bad in some of these neighborhoods. People are sleeping in their bathtub. In their bathtub.
I mean, did you hear the story of 2 weeks ago? The mother, she was sitting at home in the living room. And she was talking to her children. They were just about to turn on a movie and watch a movie together. And lo and behold, a bullet came through her window and killed her. You heard about that story?
I remember. Shot her in the neck. Yep.
I mean, a stray bullet came through the window and killed the lady. And the only thing that she wanted to do was sit down and watch a movie with her children.
That's right.
I mean, those are the type of stories that we hear about each and every day in the city of St. Louis and in Kansas City, and we're not having the discussions in this chamber, or not willing to have the discussions in this chamber about how we reduce gun violence. Because guess what? It used to be a time when the Klansmen, the KKK, would go in and kill black folks. Now we have black-on-black violence, and it's due to gun violence, and nobody's willing to stop it. No one's willing to help the inner cities reduce gun violence on the other side of the aisle. All we're talking about, Senator, all we're talking about is don't tread on me.
Check my Second Amendment?
Yep.
Second Amendment. It's really, really, really unfortunate that
we are not
having those conversations.
Conversations
of substance. Conversations that can save lives.
Yeah.
Legislation that can save lives. We're not dealing with that. So again, I ask you, what type of legislation do you think we need to help reduce violence in the city of St. Louis and Kansas City?
I think, well, a jobs program.
A who?
A jobs program. We need to pass a jobs program to put some of these people back to work.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of those young men and women that's reaping havoc in the inner city, many of them, they can't even fill out applications. So a job program, it may work for many, but those that's reaping havoc,
we need to,
not going to happen.
We need to create an environment. We need to recreate the environment that kids learn something in school, develop some kind of hope, found a job, and earned a living. Now, the wages are so low for the ones, just like you said, that probably can't fill out the application. The only thing they can do is sell drugs. So,
right. I mean,
then
it's
they
like,
end up shooting each other.
Yeah. They're out there reaping havoc. And I think that how we saw gun violence and how we saw crimes, period, we have to do a better job with the educational system. Again, we cannot continue to allow children to graduate from one grade level to the next, knowing that they're not fit. And if we continue to do that, we would have a population that cannot compete in a global economy if we continue. If we continue that, we will not have young folks in the inner city that can compete on a global economy when it comes to science and technology. Social promotions must end. We should end social promotions. Now, I know people, they talk about if you hold a kid back, that kid or that young teenager is more likely to drop out if you hold them back. And I, to some extent, I believe that if you hold them back in the eighth grade, you know, the self-esteem, you know, tear their self-esteem up. But if you know a kid is not reading at grade level, at third grade, then I don't think that will do. I mean, holding that kid back will not tamper with his or her self-esteem. I don't think so.
I agree. I agree with that.
And that's how we reduce crime. We have to quit the social promotions, and we have to educate those children. If we know that those children cannot read, there's no way we should push them on to the next level. Because again, what we are doing is setting those children up for failure. If we don't educate them, we're going to incarcerate them. We're going to pay on the front end, or we're going to pay on the back end. And we have been paying on the back end for too long because we're incarcerating them more so than we are educating them. That's how we solve the problem.
Well,
with gun violence, and that's how we solve the problem. We have to begin to take a serious approach. We cannot allow, or we shouldn't allow, for kids to be passed on from the third grade to the fourth, knowing that they're not fit for the fourth grade. And that's why you see so many young black men and women incarcerated, because we've allowed the system to fail them by passing them on.
Well, I mean, it's my own feeling that they get to be, you know, 12, 10, 12, 13 years old, and they've already lost hope. So then they go down the wrong path because they don't feel they have any other way to go.
I absolutely agree. And that's why we need to wrap our heads around this whole transfer issue. But I don't think that dealing with the transfer issue only deals with monies going outside of the district. I don't think it deals with the core issues that is plaguing many of the urban schools, because we're not dealing with the fact that kids cannot read. We're not dealing with the fact that over 60% of the children in the urban corridors are below proficiency in every subject matter. And we're not talking about how we can get them to where they need to be. We're not having that conversation. We're not having that conversation on about how much money we should put in after school, about how much money we should put towards tutoring for kids that are below proficiency in those areas. We're not having those conversations. And we hear all the time that parents, I mean, this is a direct correlation to what we're talking about, crime and gun violence, education. We hear all the time, Senator, that parents should get involved. We need more parental involvement. Well, I tell you this here. Good luck.
Right.
Because if you are waiting on that 30-year-old mother who dropped out of the system and knows nothing about parental involvement to come to the school and help that kid or talk to the teachers about her kid, then you're going to be waiting.
And
because that parent is not going to come, okay? And so we can talk all day long about parental involvement. I think that it really takes a village. You know, we need individuals like myself, because I have a little niece that I'm raising. And her mother was 15 years old when she had her. And
is that your sister?
My cousin.
Your cousin.
And I own property in the city of St. Louis, so I let her stay in one of my pieces of property. And one day, the kid was crying. And so she literally shook the kid, right? 3 years old. The kid was 3 years old. Nodule. She shook the kid, and the kid goes, you know, she almost lost her breath. And so her mom dropped out of school, and right now to this day, if she's listening, she'll be embarrassed. She's still out there in the street. And what if Nigel didn't have a person like me that said, it takes a village, that I'm going to take this kid and try to do the best I can, even though she's not mine. Now that kid can beat her mother reading, writing, and doing arithmetic. But imagine if she had to stay with her mother. Mother just got out of jail.
Hell yeah.
Mother's still smoking blunts and hanging out in the club. What if that kid had to stay in her mother's possession?
Does mother know how to read and write?
No.
Arithmetic?
No.
I didn't think so. Yeah.
And so, I mean, what if we was waiting on a mother like her to get involved in a child's education? It's not going to happen.
Well, she's going to get a different kind of education. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You just have that vicious cycle.
Yep.
You know, you don't break the cycle. And until we are able to break the cycle of despair, until we're able to break that cycle, and the only way that we're going to be able to break that cycle, we have to begin to look at the overall structure in the state of Missouri when it comes to the education system. That's how you reduce crime. I don't know anyone, you know, with a quality education, formal education, who's reaping havoc right now, who's out shooting, killing, and robbing, and stealing.
Hooligans, yeah.
I mean, you have those white-collar crimes, you know, they steal, embezzlement, and things of that sort, but
you don't
not what we're talking about tonight. I mean, it's just not happening.
Right.
And so I think that this amendment, it's a practical amendment. It's an amendment that many of my colleagues supported in the beginning.
I'll vote for it again.
And you know, I think that there should have been some dialogue, and you know, and we should have discussed what the majority plans was with the in terms of reconsidering the
I'm curious how that conversation had. How you learned about the reconsideration? Did anybody come to you and say, "Hey, we're stripping this thing out"?
No, not at all.
Just came to work one day.
I walked in the door, and then I hear the senator. I heard the senator get up, and that's how I heard about it.
That was the senator from Buchanan that made that motion, right?
Yes.
This is his motion, right?
Because we're still on the motion to reconsider, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, I think we're on a motion to
reconsider
strip the
amendment.
I think they've already passed the reconsideration. I think we're on the motion to strip the amendment.
Yeah, we're on the motion to strip the amendment. And I don't think that we should strip the amendment. I think that we should allow for that amendment to stay on this bill. Now, if they want to strip the amendment somewhere else, then that's what, that, you know, that's their prerogative. But, you know, I think that the amendment that was offered to the senator's bill from Lincoln, it's, again, a practical amendment. It doesn't...
Senator from Lincoln?
It doesn't... Franklin.
Franklin, that's right.
It doesn't really tread on the Second Amendment rights for those that, you know, that's into conceal and carry and the right to bear arms. I don't think it would do anything that would cause the people's rights to be infringed upon.
Have you been getting a lot of emails about this amendment?
You say what?
Have you been getting a lot of emails about this amendment? Because I've only gotten a couple.
That it's not, you know, in terms of what? For or against?
Against.
No. I mean, you know, you had a couple of people that, you know, they emailed me and said that, you know, you are real mean people out here. You know that?
Well, there are some.
I mean, they,
there are
really,
some.
You have some really mean people. And they say, like, the meanest things to try to hurt your feelings, you know? And if you're not tough, I mean, it'll weigh on you. Because, I mean, they send nasty, nasty emails out.
Were you in the Senate or the House when we did the puppy mill thing?
I was in the House. Yeah.
My mailbox blew up over that. But with this, I've gotten a couple, but not many. So you have to think.
What do they say to you?
Oh, nothing. Just that they're opposed to the amendment. Don't ruin a good bill. Things like that. But you know, I haven't gotten many, which leads me to believe that really a whole lot of people, they're fine with it. They just, they don't have a problem with it. So, and you're the sponsor of the amendment. You're not getting many either, so.
No, people, they say, look, this is a simple amendment. I don't think that it would infringe upon anyone's Second Amendment rights. And what's the big deal?
Yeah, that's kind of my interpretation of the thing. People aren't really upset over it. I don't know why we're drawing a line in the sand on a thing, but apparently that's what we've decided to do. But going back to the puppy mill thing, gosh, I had so many emails in there, I was afraid to open up my mailbox in the morning because people would be up all night sending stuff out.
On the puppy mill?
Yeah. I don't know if you got that in the House or not. I know we got it in the Senate.
Yeah, you know, I mean, animal lovers, people love their animals. And I think that at the end of the day, we should love for people to report stolen guns. That's what we should love. Yeah, just like we love our animals, right? I think so. And so anyway, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Okay, so my question to you is this here. Why are people telling me, like, Senator, find a way out? You know, I mean, what is that about? I'm new here in the Senate, but I don't understand that part.
Well, they're trying to give you some advice. You know, they're trying to tell you you may want to think about some kind of settlement so we can get this thing off a dead center. They're doing their best, but again, advice is pretty much what you pay for it. It's up to you what you want to do. I don't think anybody is going to budge off this topic in the near term. They're pretty resolute in their holdings. So, I don't know who's giving you the advice to find a way out. Obviously, this is a topic that you're very passionate about. You're going to have to get comfortable with that.
I'm listening to you.
It's like talking to my wife. She's off somewhere. I don't know where she is. But.
I'm sure your wife, she's extremely proud of all of the hard work you're doing here.
Yeah, you know, you know what she tells me? This household never ran as good as when you're gone 4 days a week.
She said what now?
This household has never run so good as when you're gone 4 days a week.
I agree. My husband says the same thing.
So, you're going to have to come to grips with that yourself.
What did you do this weekend that was of substance? Did you go out and meet your constituents?
I actually went out. Last night I took my wife to go see to a concert over at the Pageant. We went to see the Gaelic Storm, which do you remember a couple of years ago? The Russell Crowe got in trouble for punching a bartender out in Los Angeles, and the bartender was the lead singer for Gaelic Storm, and he, I guess after that, after he had his fisticuffs with Russell Crowe, he decided that life would be a lot more enjoyable if he sang old Irish songs, so he did that, and actually had a very good time. Have you ever been to the Pageant?
The Pageant.
The Pageant.
Oh, no,
there on Delmo.
Yeah, I was there when, I think it was a campaign going on.
You know, now that you say that,
speaking of
I
campaigns,
remember,
did you hear about the
when
Catherine
Kephart,
Hanaway getting when, into the race?
When Dick Ephart was running for president, he had an event there. You remember that? I don't know if you were there or not. It was a big event.
Yeah, that was huge. But we're going to have some very interesting races coming up. We have someone that just jumped in the governor's race. For 2016, Catherine Hanaway. What do you think is going to happen there?
Well,
I think that's going to be a knockout showdown.
I think it is. I think it is. I think it's got all the makings of a very ugly
Did
primary.
Did you see all that weight she lost? She was, like, really preparing for battle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that the city of St. Louis, we're going to carry Costa pretty well. I don't think we have any worries about that. I just want to say to you, thanks for supporting the amendment. We have a very, very serious problem. The percentage of gun theft, not just in the state of Missouri, but throughout this country, is alarming. And I really don't believe that this bill is going to stand the test of time. I do believe that this bill will be challenged in court. I don't believe that it will be upheld in court, just like I don't believe that the voter ID bill will be upheld in court once they shove that down our throats.
I was going to say, we didn't pass that yet, did we? Did I fall asleep here?
You know, we have a very serious problem with guns. Children are getting their hands on guns, and you have accidental deaths that occurs each and every day throughout this country. And it's just really unfortunate, again, that we are not dealing with the real issue of gun control and gun violence.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, it's as a society.
I don't know if you know this, but, you know, nearly three times more kids, they were injured by firearms in 2010 than the number of U.S. soldiers wounded in action. So we need to begin to wrap our heads around what's happening, what's really going on with guns, not just in America, again, in the state of Missouri. And I just don't know why we're not talking about the real issues of the day, the issues that is of substance, because this bill is, there's no substance to this bill. I don't even know why I'm standing up here talking about this amendment, because my amendment is really too good to be on this ridiculous piece of bill. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, my amendment is a really good amendment, and I shouldn't even want to have my good amendment on this horrible piece of legislation. So anyway, that is something that I'm going to continue to discuss and talk about throughout my tenure as a senator. We have to talk about the issues with guns and gun violence and gun control. So thank you, Senator. I would like to inquire the senator from the Senate.
We will wait for him to get to his desk. Senator from the 7th, would you yield to the senator from the 5th for an inquiry?
Proudly.
He does proceed.
Senator, you see these high heels I have on?
Senator, I want to tell you what a good job you've done tonight. It's outstanding work that you have showed stamina.
Well, you know what, you know, Senator, that's not what this is about. This is not about trying to prove a point that I can stand up, okay? This is not about me trying to send that message, okay? What this is about me being disrespected and my constituents being disrespected as a result of me being disrespected. You have a bill to reconsider, and not one senator who discussed the reconsideration, not one of them, they didn't come to me. They didn't say, look, Senator, this is what we're looking to do. And that's wrong. That's not how we work here in the Senate. That's what we do. That's what they did in the House. You know, just shove things down your throat. And I just think that that's not how we should be doing business.
Well, you've held the floor for 4 hours and 40 minutes. Proving that point,
messaging. Oh, I mean, Senator, this is not about how many hours I held the floor, okay? I'm not here to try to prove to no one what I can do in terms of holding the floor. None of that defines who I am. What defines me is being able to speak out against wrong and speak up and be a voice for the voiceless.
Feel like you've accomplished that?
Well, I'm going to have to continue to accomplish. That's going to until I leave the Senate.
I think that you've taken,
you know, speaking to power.
Taking a good step tonight in showing everybody, your constituents, and everybody in this chamber how you feel.
Oh, how do you feel about the bill?
Oh, I'm going to vote no on the bill. The first couple pages reads like a states' rights manifesto. That part I don't really have a problem with. I'm concerned a little bit about federal overreach on certain areas. Not necessarily for firearms, but just in general privacy issues and the like. But page 4, when it starts to put penalty provisions, local law enforcement working with federal agents, that's where the bill loses my support. The school protection officer part, I had a serious problem with. I still think it's the wrong direction to go. But the senator from Franklin was gracious enough in his leadership for this bill to work with me to find a solution that I could live with. And I think it's interesting that the senator from Franklin has taken a lot of grief over two people who are never going to vote yes on the bill.
You know, absolutely. I mean,
we can be honest there, right? But I understand the end objective of what they're trying to accomplish. I disagree with how they're going about doing it.
Okay.
And so I will be voting no on the bill, and I think that that's the right policy choice for the state. And I do think it's unconstitutional as well. The Supremacy Clause has been very clear over the last, you know, 237 years, or actually 1789 when the Constitution was ratified. So, you know, since then, the Supremacy Clause has been very clear that the federal government has the authority to override unless the 10th Amendment grants those rights to the states. And I think that I tend to be on Jeffersonian side more than Hamilton side. I believe that strong states are a important check against federal power. This bill, like I said, you read the first 3 pages of it, it reads like the states' rights manifesto, and there are a lot of things in there that I do agree with. But it takes it too far, and it is unconstitutional. And I think
So do you think that...
I like your amendment.
Say that again.
I like your amendment.
I like yours as well.
Thank you.
So do you think that the bill would be challenged in the court?
I think that it faces first a gubernatorial veto.
You think the governor will veto it?
I don't know that. He has certainly not shared his plans with me, but I would suggest that the provisions that law enforcement are concerned about. You got to keep in mind that our governor was the attorney general for 16 years. He is probably not going to come down on the wrong side of what the law enforcement in the state are saying about the bill. And ultimately, it would hamper some joint task force operations. And I think in the end, my opinion is the governor will veto this bill. And if it is overridden, as it almost was during veto session, I believe that it will not withstand a federal constitutional challenge.
All right. How much do you think the state would have to pay? How much do you think the state would have to spend on such a challenge?
I wouldn't.
That's a really good question. I would love to know that.
I wouldn't know the answer to that question. But, you know, again, I know you weren't accepting my compliments earlier. But I want to say that I think that you've gotten your message out there. You have made your point. You have been a voice for your constituents who you are representing to say that you disagree with the direction of this bill and you are passionately for the amendment that you offered to it. And I think from that standpoint, as individual senators, we are the emissaries on behalf of the 177,000 people that voted to have us here. And I think that you accomplished the goal of being crystal clear on your position on the underlying bill and the amendment. And outside of winning the messaging war, I don't know.
And see, I don't even want to have that type of conversation because this is not about me winning the message, okay? Again, this is about standing up and speaking truth.
But this
to
is
power.
A legislative, but Senator, this is a legislative process.
And
you have to have an end game to that process. And we've all I'm the last member of our caucus that you've
if I decide I want to stay up for 10 more hours, you know, or two more hours, what's the big deal? I mean, the bottom line is this here, that I have to be a voice for the voiceless.
I think you have been.
Okay. And that's what matters to me. Have you had the opportunity? You should purchase this Mason's manual. It's a really, really good piece of, it's a really good book.
Which Mason are we talking about? George Mason?
No.
This
is the Mason Manual.
The author.
Jefferson. Let's see. No, this actually came from Jefferson's Manual. This came from the National Conference of State Legislators. And it's a really, really, really good piece of work. When you want to learn parliamentary rules and laws.
I don't know if you're aware, but in the off season, I teach a class called History of the Constitution for University of Phoenix. And in that class, we discuss the Federalist Papers and the Jeffersonian and Hamilton view of the scope of government. And of course, Jeffersonian was for agrarian democracy, and Hamilton was for a strong federal government. And do you know one of the stories that happened between those two gentlemen that ultimately shaped and defined the history of our country? They were having dinner, and Hamilton really wanted debt consolidation among the colonies. So essentially all 13 colonies had their own individual debts that they had to foreign powers for the Revolution. And Hamilton thought that if he could consolidate all of those debts into one federal debt, that would bind the colonies together. And Jefferson, he was very leery of a national bank. He was very literal of federal standing armies. Just was very concerned about the direction that federalism would go in. But at this dinner, Hamilton had offered to trade the location of the capital. The capital was intended to be in New York City.
Sure.
And Jefferson and Washington both wanted it a little closer to home, so they agreed to a little spot on the Potomac that today is Washington, D.C., and in exchange for them moving the capital from New York City to what is currently Washington, D.C. today, Hamilton got his way on consolidating the colony's debt into a federal debt, which today now we're $17 trillion and counting in that debt being incurred. So, you know, you never know. And Jefferson went to his grave saying that was the biggest mistake he ever made, was giving Hamilton that consolidation of debt. But I just find it interesting that here we are 200 years later, and this bill is basically, and again, I disagree with it hinging on firearms, and I disagree with the tactics that it's undertaking. But ultimately, this is a states' rights bill. This is a bill to tell the federal government that we believe that the 10th Amendment grants our state the sovereign ability to control our citizens. The U.S. Constitution has set forth the Bill of Rights, and in that bill is the Second Amendment, and our state is going to protect that, even at the, what I believe, the unconstitutional cost of arresting local law enforcement for working with federal agents. And I you know, that's where I think the bill...
You know, and I don't have a problem with that. You know, I just think that the extremism, any form of extreme is just too much. I mean, if extremism from any angle, if it's extremism from the left or extremism from the right, I just think that it's poisoning. I mean, it's like a cancer, because, and it's uncurable. When you have just individuals, they just go to the extreme. There's no middle ground. Okay, that's what's killing this country, you know, and that's why we're losing that whole bipartisan fight, because everyone is they're just too extreme. Extremism to the left, extremism to the right, and there is no middle course. And we see it happening on the federal level as well as on the state level. We have to get back to, and I know it sounds like a cliche, but we have to get back to bipartisanship, where we can agree to disagree without being disagreeable.
But wouldn't you suggest,
and not going to the extreme.
But Senator, wouldn't you suggest that prior to this reconsideration that we did have good bipartisanship on this bill? I mean, I was in the Senator from Franklin's office when the two of you stood side by side and talked about the amendment, talked about the role of the NRA as a special interest group in this process.
But you know what? Hold on, Senator. But you know what? What just happened here tonight says a lot about who controls this body, special interest group. I mean, it came out in the light today. I mean, a lot of times we speculate about it, we talk about it, but we had the opportunity to see it at work. We had the opportunity to see one special interest group change the minds of many of my colleagues.
I'm so sure it was so much a change of mind as well.
No. They changed their mind. I mean,
they put fear of a rated vote into the equation.
Yeah, but I mean, how can you? I mean, why?
But Senator, but if you think this is not partisan, this problem that we have here tonight is not just an NRA Republican. It could be labor and Democrats. You know, the senator from Franklin got up last year.
I don't always agree with labor.
But listen, though. But the senator from Franklin got up last year and admonished the senator from the first for announcing that a vote was going to be a rated COPE vote, and said, we don't do that in this chamber. We are the Senate, and regardless of how an interest is going to rate your vote, we don't bring that into here.
I remember that.
Now, I have to tell you that I think that he's been fairly consistent with his denouncement of the NRA. I mean, this reconsideration aside, whether he knew about it or not or talked to you about it or not, I'm not going to pass judgment over how you feel about that. But you'd have to agree that he has taken the NRA to task, just as he would expect anyone else to take a special interest group to task. Now, you know, again, this stems from a larger problem of campaign finance and our ethics laws. And you know, I know you have a bill that deals with campaign finance, and we had, you'd mentioned earlier in the evening in tonight's debate that you were the final vote in lifting.
Yeah, that was really a bad vote. That was a horrible vote, regret that vote each and every day.
You know what, though? You have seen the error of that way, and you have modified your position and decided a new course for your office and for your efforts is warranted. And I'm hopeful that this chamber, because we're only placeholders. Every single senator in this room is just holding this seat for a short period of time. This, you and I came in together 8 years ago. Can you believe it's been 8 years?
Oh, wow. 8 years?
8 years.
Already?
Almost a decade you and I have served in this building. And I think about all
of telling my age now, Senator. Young girl in the old world.
All of the experiences that we've had have shaped, you know, who we are and the legislators that we've become and what we will be. But ultimately, another 8 years is going to go by very quickly. And then we will be gone, and someone else will be having these mics, and we'll have wondered what we could have done.
Yeah, because I'm going back into the entrepreneur world.
Well, I feel like if we looked at it in the true frame of what it is, which is a short-term time to try to make change, to affect change, then maybe we will start addressing some of the problems. And I believe unlimited campaign contributions are a problem. I believe that having zero ethics laws in terms of revolving door is a problem.
I agree. Thank you, Senator. I want to say thank you very much. You know, again, I'm about to close.
Okay.
Because I truly believe that my amendment probably shouldn't be on this horrible bill anyway. Because my amendment, it's a good amendment. And it's an amendment that I know many people throughout the state of Missouri believes in and would support. And to know that this bill is going down in flame, I don't feel like I need to attach my amendment.
Can I tell you that I'm
proud? I don't feel like I need to attach my amendment to this bill. No way.
Senator, can I tell you that I'm proud of you without you arguing about it? Can I tell
Listen,
you that I'm
you
proud of you?
This is not about you being proud of me,
me about
Senator.
It.
This
so
is about
no.
This is about me not wanting to having second thoughts like the rest of my colleagues. Everybody's having second thoughts around here. This is about me having second thoughts of even wanting my amendment to be attached to a bill that is going to go down in flame anyway. So, with that, you know, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to inquire of you.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President, I noticed the absence of a quorum.
The absence of a quorum has been noted.
Thank you.
Please ring the bell and summon the senators to the chamber. A quorum is present. Senator from the 5th.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on the reconsideration motion for Senate Amendment 5 to the Senate Committee Substitute. Hearing none. Senator from Buchanan, you are recognized to close. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Senator, but that is not a motion which requires a closing motion, but noted. Secretary, please call the roll on the reconsideration motion.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey,
aye.
Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevney, Kehoe, Kraus, Logger, Lamping, Lavoda, Leibla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
Senator from the 9th. Senator from the 9th votes no. Senator from Andrew.
Aye.
Senator from Andrew votes aye. Senator from Barry.
Aye.
Senator from Barry votes aye. Senator from Cape. He voted. Senator from the 13th. Senator from the 13th votes no.
And what am I doing? 29 vote.
Okay. 29 ayes. 22 ayes. I'm sorry. 9 noes.
What's that again?
We have reconsidered Senate Amendment 5. So we are back on Senate Amendment 5. Discussion on Senate Amendment 5. Senator from the 5th. Senator from the 5th. We are on Senate Amendment 5. Does any senator desire to be Senator from the 5th? Senator, could you please speak into your microphone? I'm sorry. You do have, we'll give you have the floor.
Not allowing for my amendment to go on at this point because it won't stand up in court. And it's just a waste of time for a really good amendment. So I close.
Senator from the 5th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 5. As many are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary say no.
No.
The noes appear to have it. The noes do have it. The amendment is, you have failed to adopt Senate Amendment 5. We are back on discussion of the Senate Committee Substitute. Does any other senator desire to be heard on the Senate Committee Substitute? Hearing none, Senator from Franklin, you're recognized to close on the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from Franklin has renewed his motion for the adoption of Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 613. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary say no.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the Senate Committee Substitute. Senator from Franklin, you are recognized on the printing and perfection motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I now move that Senate Bill 613 be perfected and printed.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Franklin. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from Franklin has renewed his motion that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 613 as amended be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary say no.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have declared perfected and ordered printed Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 613. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to order of business. Report standing committee, and I have a report.
Reports of standing committee. Senator from Newton, please send your report forward. Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 36, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully submitted, Senator Richard, Chairman.
Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to business announcements.
Senator, first, I have a couple things I need to do. I would like to refer Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 36 to the Governmental Accountability and Fiscal Oversight Committee. Also, please refer Senate Concurrent Resolutions 32 and House Concurrent Resolution 18 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics. Please refer the gubernatorial appointments to the Gubernatorial Appointments Committee. Sorry, Senator from Newton.
The Senate will go to order business announcements.
Announcements. Hearing none, Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, no further business come before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Newton. As many are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned under the rules.